This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. We are live and local at the Northwest Ag Show here in the Columbia Hall, right across the breezeway from the Jeckman Long Building. Come on out. They're open until 7 p.m. tonight. They're going to be open tomorrow as well to 2 o'clock. So many things to see. If you're a hobbyist or you're a rancher or you are a farmer, anything having to do with ag, come out and see all the exhibits and get some education as well. It's nice to be out here. Some of these remotes are just the most interesting part of this job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one, you talk to a lot of different people who are doing different things, and you get this huge perspective of what happens in this industry. However, right now, we pushed them from before the hour to the top of the hour, but we do not want to get through Thursday without talking to Cowboy Ron.
Thank you.
Sergeant Mike.
That's it.
All right, right here in the KYKN booth. Come back and hit up at the corner, and you can hear us live. We've got the speaker going and everything. You can tell Cowboy Ron what he's got wrong. What he's got right.
Well, they got some. I think things are going right out here.
Yeah, and I was I was hearing that you want to talk a little bit about gun legislation.
Well, you know what we should talk about first.
Tell me.
Is how great rural America is here.
Absolutely.
Rural Oregon's here.
Yeah.
Look at the displays, the effort they put together to put these things together. The people that are here, the farm community, incredible.
Yeah, it is amazing. You mean the economy that's not important to the governor?
Yes.
Well, that's right. Isn't it right,
Absolutely.
Sarge? The governor said that she doesn't need, Oregon doesn't need rural Oregon.
No, she can just go to Safeway and get it.
Yeah.
And that's how that works.
We got tools right here in front of us. We've got this big grain elevator that takes grain from the trucks and puts it in storage bags. My God, maybe the governor doesn't want any grain.
Sergeant Mike, I think that's the funniest thing I've ever heard you say. The governor can just go to Safeway and get it.
Yeah.
We don't actually need the entire economic sector that provides the food.
Yeah.
You know, over the 2 days when we've been broadcasting here, we've wanted to take a broad swath of different groups within agriculture, and one of them is 4-H. Mm. We had them over yesterday, and today we had the Farm Bureau of Oregon here today.
Yeah.
We need a big thing in this industry is a continuance plan. You know, what happens when dad, who's 55, gets to be 65 or 75 and can't do it anymore? Who's going to want it? Because by 2050, we're going to have 9 billion people in the world, and that's a big deal to us. That is in agriculture because they got to get fed.
Well, yeah, the dairy industry is incredible, and what you have to look at is the influence on the youth. These rural farming families that create great children that care about our the conditions of the earth and the ecostructure.
Indeed, and the farmers are getting better. I think the ag industry is getting better at talking about we are the stewards of the land.
Yes,
we're not the enemy of the land. We're the stewards of the land. Nobody cares more about our net worth and our assets in the dirt than we do.
Yeah, and it's a risky business. I mean, I was a general contractor. You've all done different things, Brent and Sarge, but we have our exposure to Mother Nature.
Yep.
I mean, the farmer, here comes the rain, here comes the freeze. These people have got some, let's say, grit.
Yeah, and I think it's not just Oregon that has this problem. We got a whole bunch of people running for president right now that considers Iowa a place to fly over except once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, Pocahontas got in an argument with old
Bernie
last night.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was great. Take the gloves off. Let him go.
You called me a liar.
You're in the front of America.
He says, let's just talk about this later.
Yeah. Oh, Bernie, you crazy boy.
Well, you opened the door, Cowboy Ron, and I want to talk about this. It hasn't been up in Newsmakers for a while. Gun legislation was a topic last session. It kind of got pushed to the side with a deal. People don't remember. There are actually two Republican walkouts.
Right.
Right. So it got put on the shelf, as it were. And those of us who are savvy and
they're ludicrous.
You know, that's coming back. It's coming back.
Yeah, they're coming back now to a lockup of guns. And they want us to lock up the firearms. And the only one you'd have unlocked is the one that you have on you. So at night when you go to bed, you strap on a elastic belt and put your Glock 17 or 19 in it. The problem is that we remove a lot of locks. People forget their key, lose their key.
You mean at your store?
At the store. Okay. So they bring in a shotgun with a lock on it that they lost the key. It takes us about 30 seconds to get that lock off. And they want to bring up this legislation as saying that the homeowner is responsible for that lock. So if when somebody breaks your front door down, backs a semi up or a U-Haul up to the back of it, gets your safe, takes all your guns home, and drills off the locks, you tell me who's responsible for it? Yeah. So we've got legislation coming up from a bunch of representatives that have no realization to life. If you want to look at life, go to Portland. We're killing one or two a night. The gang's doing it. We aren't doing it. The honest citizen has no issues here. We're just trying to live, raise our children, and keep our commerce going.
What gun legislation is rational and okay, and what's not?
Well, I'll tell you what's a good one, I think. The 941 law that came forward. Anybody coming in to buy a firearm has to do a background check. I have no problem with it. Oregon has a transfer law now. Private citizens, these two gentlemen over here to the right, if they want to trade guns, they got to come somewhere to an FF dealer and do a transfer. It's good because we don't want these firearms going at garage sales. And the first people that go to garage sales on Saturday morning is somebody looking for an illegal firearm. And the person that has a garage sale, her husband just passed. Oh, I don't care about that. Sell it to him for $225. And you just gave a felon a gun.
Wow. You know, and your store is Gun Crafters here in Salem. That's where this work gets done.
Yeah, thank you, Sarge.
You bet. So, you know, I on this and a number of other things, I just want to thank Joe Beach. He's the CEO of the Capital Press, which is the ag weekly of the Pacific Northwest and Northern California. They do such a great job on issues and stating the way they think about it. And they're a good mouthpiece for agriculture.
They're incredible. They print the truth. Their opinions are generally right on. Mm-hmm. And they have an opinion on both sides. They were concerned about the trade bill. They gave the pros and cons of what the trade bills are doing. We've got some pluses there. Beef farm community is doing really good with their Japanese beef. And I think if you let Mr. Trump just roll for another term, he'll do fine.
Yes, he will.
My boy Trump.
Yes, sir.
He does say no, and I love it.
So on the gun, I keep circling around here because you're an expert for me today. And we're talking mostly ag. We got a two-hour show here at the Northwest Ag Show at the Salem Fairgrounds. I should say State Fairgrounds. And I love to point out from the last hour that we stole this show. We lured the show. It was been in Portland the last couple of years. It's come to Salem. Yeah. And they do make a material impact to our economy around
here. Oh, my gosh. And then the community, whether you're non-farming, if you're a household tool user, come and see the beautiful sales they got on that black skill product.
DeWalt.
Or DeWalt, right.
They've got
huge display, chainsaws, everything.
I mean, maybe 1,000 items on display.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Let's talk investments, because I tell you, my DeWalt I bought was the best investment I've ever made.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you keep the battery charged?
Two. I got to keep two batteries, and one's always charging while I'm working the other. But the thing is indestructible.
Yeah.
Sorry. They're not even a sponsor. We got to get them a sponsor. But
yeah,
I tell you, I'm like, I got so much productivity out of that DeWalt, I tell you.
But, you know, just citizens, be aware. Let's kick back to that gun legislation and look at this pre-bill. It's out right now. It's absolutely ridiculous. that they're taking away, trying to take away the rights of honest citizens, people that register their guns or do their background checks, and they keep them, they're teaching their children. Yeah, how are you going to control a criminal that's on drugs?
Yeah, it's hard to do that. Yeah. And that's always the conversation is so heated. I like, you've got a couple of years under your belt. You've been around. You've seen the industry.
Yeah.
You've seen regulators and politicians come
nothing,
and go.
Does nothing.
Safety things. You favor, hey, not wrong. You don't want to put the gun in the hands of a mentally ill person or a felon, like illegally and this and that. There's going to be some elements, kernels that, well, that's a good idea, but these people are taking it way too far.
Oh, it's completely a different spectrum.
Do you go to the Capitol and talk to them? When there's a bill, do you go to a committee?
Occasionally we have a rep there that goes.
Not you?
No.
Who's the better spokesman?
Well,
we got Cowboy Ron right here.
Cowboy Ron, he gets a little fired up.
I got to watch my temper.
Then they throw him out, you know. He's the guy you see getting thrown out the folding doors in the saloon. That's him. He's the one to get out.
You got to leave.
All right, guys, we got to take a break. There's more people to talk to here at the Northwest Ag Show at the State Fairgrounds. Here till 7 tonight, till 2 tomorrow. We're out here in the Columbia Hall, so come join us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires, live from the Northwest Ag Show on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by the fine folks at Sylvan Learning Center. And welcome back live to the Columbia Hall at the Oregon State Fairgrounds. That's where we're at the Northwest Agricultural Show for a special 2 hours of Newsmakers today, and Bill O'Reilly coming up at 2:04. Don't worry, you won't miss him. And then Gorka will be on right after that. I'm with Brent DeHart, my co-host and cohort here at the show, and we're having a great time learning all kinds of things about these equipment.
I know, it's going fast.
There's some new things here too.
We're learning about equipment, we're learning about politics, and we're about to learn about market in terms of we've got John Lee joining us in the booth. He's a Northwest Farm broker, right? Does that mean your business is buying and selling these things?
We sell farms, yep.
You sell
the whole farm? Like the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. We'll sometimes sell a herd of cattle with the farm.
Really?
We'll sell equipment. It'll all be packaged together.
Sure. Nice.
Interesting. Yeah. So there's so many things out here from, we're not very far. We're just spitting distance from a huge container that's designed to capture rain. Right?
Right.
I mean, the breadth of things that you can see out here at the Ag Show are pretty amazing. You know, even if you're not a rancher, maybe not a farmer, you may want to come down and check it out now until 7 tonight and until 2 tomorrow. Hey, so John, welcome to the booth. Nice to have you. Well, I was talking last segment or the segment before about how many different economic activity, how many economic sectors are affected by the agricultural agribusiness. And obviously real estate is one of them. Right. And you said you're in the business of selling farms and finding a buyer. Is it like a realtor somebody might get to sell their house?
Yeah. And well, in my experience, I've been selling real estate for 30 years. And I do sell a few houses. And of course, when we sell farms, they're generally houses part of the farm package. Mm-hmm. And I've sold commercial properties as well. But in the last, say, 10 years, I've been focusing on acreage and farms. And it's the farm sales are cyclical. They kind of follow commodity pricing. So when hazelnut prices are up, we find a demand for hazelnut orchards.
Mm.
And obviously, as prices drop, and so we're right now we're seeing an upswing in the milk market. So we do happen to sell a lot of dairy farms. So we've got several dairies for sale right now.
So are these family-owned companies that don't have somebody to take over and they're selling it to a larger operator? What are you mostly seeing? Is it a transfer to another operation who's new to the business, or is there a consolidation into bigger, bigger groups?
Well, we see both, but it's hard for younger generations to get into, you know, just to buy a farm outright. But we do see a lot of older guys, people that want to retire. If their kids don't want to take it over, so then we end up with a, you know, we get a phone call and they, you know, there's a transition discussed in the family, and we put the farm up for sale.
We're talking to John Lee. I'm wondering, how do you go about valuing, this is what this farm is worth? Because there are real estate values, there's cash flow values, because it's a business.
Right.
So sometimes businesses are valued on, you know, how much gross profit you can expect, what's the cash flow that it generates, and so forth. And then there's also somewhat of a lifestyle value and a tradition value that may not translate into what the buyer wants to, I mean, the seller wants to get. What's a good rule of thumb or a good methodology you guys use?
Well, that's a complex question, but yeah, on a large farm, which we've sold farms where you have 1,000 acres and 20 houses and 2,000 head of cattle, and, you know, so it gets kind of complicated, but we generally break a farm down into its components. So we have the land base, the improvements, and then obviously houses, you know, barn infrastructure, that type of thing, parlors. So we add the component of the land, the improvements, and then obviously equipment. In some cases, we're selling cattle with the farm. So we kind of break it apart. That's similar to what the county appraisers do as well, or the county assessors, is they break a farm down into its components. And we kind of do the same thing, really, and then add it back together. Of course, we always look at comparable sales, if there are any.
Yeah.
And we
if
can,
there are any, that is a very good caveat.
And we generally can establish a value per acre for the land, and then we do break the land down into, you know, tillable land. We call it ancillary land, land that might be wetland or along the roads and the ditches that isn't productive. we of course add value if it's got water rights. That's a big deal.
Wow, that would be an enormous deal.
So, I mean, we've worked on complicated projects before, and then sometimes they're fairly simple, where you might have a nice 80-acre piece where a lot of uniformity throughout the farmland, and it's kind of it's fairly simple. But there's
so when's a good time to buy, or never phrase that. When's a good time to sell? So I've got a farm, I want an operation, it's a dairy farm, it's a wheat farm, it's a grassy farm, and I want to retire sometime in the next 5 years. When's a good time for someone to say, hey, now's the really good time to sell my business and my farm?
Well, I would say it's when it's good time for you in your personal situation. I mean, there are always people looking to buy. And as you know, in Oregon, population is increasing. There's pressure from, you know, just growth.
Mm-hmm.
And there are neighbors that are trying to expand. Often they want to, you know, buy up the neighbor farm. So I wouldn't say there's a good or bad time to sell. I'd say it's what's right for you.
We're talking to John Lee. He's a Northwest farm broker. Do you also handle lease? Because I know a lot of farmers will lease out their land for production. Do you handle that at all, or just sales?
Primarily sales. Yeah, we occasionally run into leasing, but primarily we sell farms.
So you said that sometimes a deal could include the cattle that's on the ranch and so
yes.
forth as one of the assets. It's like a farmer might have 15 implements or what have you. Do you just ever sell the pieces, or is it always a package?
Well, in some cases, the owner, like for example, with dairy farms, in some cases the farm's been shut down and the cattle are gone.
Oh.
So it's basically, you know, operations been all stopped, and the cattle are gone, so they've already been sold by often a cattle broker. But currently we're selling a couple of farms that are, you know, in full operation. And so what we've done there is we've negotiated the price of the farm, and then we've got a situation where we bring in an outside cattle expert to give us a price, because price of cattle fluctuates like a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring in a neutral party to set the price on the cattle and reach an agreement on what the price of the, you know, per head is.
So tell me, who are the sellers in the last few years and the next few years? Who are the people who are selling their farms? Is there a demographic or an age?
Yeah, sure. Well, generally it'd be older. It's older folks that want to retire, and if they don't have kids, that want to take it over.
Okay.
So that's... Yeah, primarily my sellers would be, I would guess, mostly in their little older, in their 60s or 70s or older.
So, or older. Some of these farmers, they're going out there and they're running the combine. Into
I'm sure
80s.
That some of them are thinking of just retiring there, though, right? On their farm.
Well, we see it all, but yeah, and there, I mean, we've sold farms where we'd call it a life estate, where we sell the farm and the new guy takes over, but the owner can retain the right to use the house for as long as he's alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very creative answer. Yeah. What about, more importantly, and this is what has been in the news the last few years and been of a concern, that there are out-of-state interests or big corporate interests that are coming and consolidating, and said the death knell for the small family farm is impending. You think that's the case? Has that been exaggerated or not discussed enough?
I think that's not really what I see in my practice. We see... There are some local farmers that get bigger. You know, they'll buy out the neighbor and expand. Often they have kids that want to farm and they need more land to operate. And we've had some out of town or out of the area buyers come in. But generally, most of our sales are to other Oregonians.
That's good news.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I know that your role is in between, you know, the buyer and the seller, and sometimes you have to help them connect with resources, lending, obviously. Do you find a pretty good lending market for people who are trying to buy and needing to get a loan to buy a farm? Do you have connections that you help your clients get into?
Sure. There's no problem. There's plenty of funds available. You have to qualify. It's not always easy to... qualify for financing, but we also do what's called seller financing, where mm-hmm. If the owner has a lot of equity in their farm, we can negotiate a contract where they'll, you know, negotiate basically payments to the seller. It's called seller financing.
Right.
Or land sale contract.
All right, one last question. Is it still possible to finance a farm through a bank if there's cannabis being grown on it?
Selectively, there are a lot of banks don't want to mess with it.
Yeah.
So cannabis or hemp?
Cannabis.
I'm not aware of any cannabis lenders. There are a few guys that will work with hemp,
mm-hmm.
but because the laws are, you know, new and there's still not some, we don't have, it's a developing topic.
Yeah.
That's a little tricky.
Indeed. Well, I want to thank John Lee and Northwest Farm Broker for coming to the booth here at the Northwest Ag Show with me and Dave. Thank you for being here. We're going to have to take a quick break. We're going to come back and try to finish up our 2-hour special newsmakers here at the Oregon State Fairgrounds. Stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN Salem in its Agricultural Valley. They're all listening.
Len Benton Tractors Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, live from the Northwest Ag Show on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Mr. Rich Kansky of Green Acres Landscape, and that's all part of the agriculture here in the Mid-Willamette Valley, where we are in the Columbia Hall building at the Oregon State Fairgrounds for the Northwest Agricultural Show, put on by the Capitol Press. Great conversations today. If you're tuning in for Gorka, he's coming up after Bill O'Reilly, and that will be at 2:04. But right now, it's a special edition of Newsmakers with myself, Dave, and Brent.
And it has been nice. We've touched on a lot of different aspects about agriculture. And the boss man just said, looking at our new guest coming into the booth with us, it's like, well, we've been talking about growing it. We've been talking about creating it. Let's talk about eating it.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, which I do like. It's not all about politics and the perfunctory aspects of growing it. But let's talk about what happens in agriculture when people who need fed get fed. Joining us in the KYKN booth here in the Columbia Hall is Sayla Ellsbury Kraft. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
That is a cool name. Can I ask you about your name?
Sure.
Is that a family name, Sayla? I've never met a Sayla.
Sayla it's kind of a unique name. It can be found in a couple of different religious texts.
Oh, really?
But I've been told it means to pause and reflect on what has just been said.
That is awesome.
That's cool.
Man, I need to do that more often. To pause and reflect. She's with, she's a food resource developer at Marion Polk Food Share. right?
Yes.
So we're just talking during the break. I've just met this young woman, and she already seems delightful, but you're an Aggie. You came from UC Davis.
I did.
I equate UC Davis a lot with Oregon State in terms of the type of programs it has and its agricultural focus.
Yes. Right?
So yeah. I went to UC Berkeley, so not very far away. But UC Davis, great school. And you found your way to the Mid-Valley, and you got a role right here with Marion Polk Food Share.
I did. So I have a background in agriculture. Like you mentioned, I went to UC Davis for that. And after getting out of school, I worked on a hunger relief program. And then I moved up to Oregon. I used to live in Oregon as a teenager and always knew I'd end up back up here. I really love Oregon. And I found this job opening at Marion Polk Food Share. I'm a food resource developer. I work with farms and food processors that donate to our food bank. And it felt like the perfect marriage of all of my worlds of working with farms and working on hunger relief and being able to do both of those things.
Food resource developer. What that means is find food that we can distribute for people who are hungry, right?
Yep.
That means go find the resources that brings the food in the door that goes out to people who need it.
Yes.
Right? All right. Tell us a little bit about Marion Polk Food Share, its footprint, how many people it feeds and all that.
Marion Polk Food Share, our service region is in Marion and Polk counties, mm-hmm. and we're a warehouse up in northeast Salem, in the industrial part of Salem. We provide food for about 100 different agencies throughout Marion and Polk counties. We deliver food to those agencies. They also come and get food from our warehouse. And ultimately, as a network, we're providing food for about 47,000 individuals each month, and that includes 15,000 children.
Wow, that is a lot of people who have food scarcity. Yeah. They call it food insecurity? Is that what you call it?
Yes, yeah.
So
most of this is raw food, right? I mean, it's none of us prepared, right?
We have some foods that come through that are ready to eat, like shelf-stable soups and things like that. But a good percentage of the food is fresh produce that you can cook with, baking goods, the staple items that you need in your pantry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how do you intersect with the agricultural community and what you do? It's your job.
Great. Yeah. So my job is to work with farms in the region and food processors that donate to our food bank. We have a good number of farms in this region, this being one of the most agriculturally abundant regions in the state. And we have a lot of farms that contribute. Some of the big ways that we work with farms is through our partnerships with two really great organizations named Salem Harvest and Farmers Ending Hunger. Salem Harvest brings volunteers out to farms to harvest produce that would otherwise get left in the field. So if a farm has a crop that they don't have capacity to harvest it, they don't have a market for it, or it's something like they're harvesting onions and there's some left in the field that are too small for their market, they can bring a group of volunteers out and harvest that produce. The volunteers bring home a portion of that produce with them, and half or more of what gets harvested comes to the food share. This last year, Salem Harvest harvested about 500,000 pounds of food that would have just otherwise been left in the fields.
That's pretty impressive.
What does 500,000 pounds look like? Holy cow. That is a lot of food.
It is.
And it's done by volunteers.
Done by volunteers.
Wow.
They lead a little food safety tutorial in the beginning, so the volunteers wash their hands and get some guidance about how to be on a farm. And so they do a really good job with that. There was about 26 different varieties of produce that they harvested last year.
We're talking to Selah Ellsbury Kraft of Marion Polk Food Share. Is your job involved going out and building relationships with growers in terms of getting awareness that this is available, to make sure the food is not going to waste, and try to find kind of a chain of events that can make that food go from potentially wasted into nourishment?
So in my work, what I try and do is get out to different events or partner up with folks that work really closely with farms to get the word out about the work that we do. Like I mentioned, we're a large warehouse space. We have about 9 million pounds of food that move through our warehouse each year, and about 60% of that food is fresh and frozen. So we have a lot of capacity for fresh produce, and I think that's something that's not always known. We can go and pick up produce with our trucks. We can pay farmers a pick and pack out rate to help cover their cost of getting produce out of the field that they may want to donate to us. We can connect them with Salem Harvest or Farmers Ending Hunger, like I mentioned. And so getting that word out that this is an option for farms, even if they have a lot or only a little bit of produce, no matter what amount.
Do people come to Marion and Polk Food Share directly? You said you're distributing it out to other agencies that might be closer to the neighborhoods or closer to the need, right? Yeah. As a family with some hunger issues, do they drive to your location, or is it typically solved by one of these other agencies?
Yeah, that's a great question. At Marion Polk Food Share, we don't do any direct service. We are a distribution center for 100 different partner agencies, which includes food pantries, meal sites, places where folks can get after-hours boxes. And that's where the direct service, where the people are coming and getting the food.
Really interesting. Happening. Let's talk a little bit about Marion Polk Food Share in relation to the whole state, because obviously it's not the only food agency in the state. Is there a network and an overarching umbrella?
Yes, we are one of 21 regional food banks across the state that make up the Oregon Food Bank Network. So Oregon Food Bank Network is comprised of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Clark County Food Bank is a part of our network. The food bank in Portland supports the efforts across the state. So one of the really great ways that we work together as a state is if there's an excess of product in an outerlying part of the state that one regional food bank in that area can't handle, then that produce, fresh produce or whatever product it is, can go to the main hub in Portland and get distributed across our state to those 21 regional food banks. Our network is supplying food for 1,200 partner agencies across the state, and that network is feeding 260,000 people each month.
Wow. Holy cow. Wow, that is a lot. All right, I got one more question. And so far, I've got one more question. What about the food processing? It's a big industry in the Valley. They're processing the food coming out, and maybe it's mislabeled. Maybe it is not good to their market as far as going to market. Smudgy labels, you know, plastic bags went sideways. I don't know. I'm making it up. Green beans a little underweight, those kinds of things. Are those also contributors to your role?
Yes, those are also types of products that we're getting. We will oftentimes have product donated that was slightly off spec. The recipe wasn't exactly right, but there's nothing wrong with the food. And so we'll get cans of items that are maybe unlabeled, and we'll put a label on them with the ingredients. Or like you mentioned, things that are the wrong weight or just slightly off.
Was NORPAC one of those contributors? And was that? And are we taking a big hit for Marion Polk Food Share?
NORPAC was a very big contributor, not just for Marion Polk Food Share, but also for the statewide network. And now with all of the changes, we have yet to see what impact that will have.
So, all right, this is a silly question. What do you end up having an overabundance of? Like, our people just can't eat that many Brussels sprouts, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. What's in shortest supply and what is overabundant that we just can't get enough people to eat them?
That's a good question. We this year have a large amount of food that we've been getting through the government due to the tariffs. Huh? This year there's much more than we've had in the past. And one of the items that we've seen that's subsidized that's now coming through our network is split peas. So that's something that's in abundance. Luckily, it lasts a long time, so it's not a fresh product that we have to worry about it going bad quickly. But we've been getting creative, coming up with recipes and how you could use split peas in lots of different ways.
We think, Dave, we should have a contest for split pea soup, split pea recipes. You know, to make sure we utilize that. What about the in shortest supply?
Short of supply, one of the things that we've heard that is needed more of is dairy. Dairy's a big one. Proteins, meats, and fresh produce. Like I mentioned, fresh produce is a really large part of our distribution across the state. It's 15% of our food distributed is fresh produce, but there's always a need for more of that too.
Well, thank you, Selah Ellsbury Kraft, food resource developer. Well,
that's
at the end of 2 hours there, yeah. Marion Polk Food Chair. Any last words you want to let us know about?
I'd like to just add that. We're not able to do this work without the help of our community, and it really takes the community being invested in ending hunger to make this all possible. And so just wanted to add that piece.
That's right.
Community. Thank you all, volunteers.
Makes it all go around. Collaboration City.
Yes.
We call it. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We're at the Northwest Ag Show, Dave Bourne and myself. And so come on out till 7 tonight at Columbia Hall and Jackman Long Building and see all the toys. We're going to have one more segment here before we finish up with our special two-hour edition and getting forward to Gorka and to Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Right. So stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires, live from the Northwest Ag Show on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. And we'd be remiss if we didn't thank Capital Press for having us here today, the organizers of the Northwest Agricultural Show. It's going on today till about 7 o'clock, tomorrow 9 to about 2 o'clock. It's in two of the huge buildings, the Jackman Long and the Columbia Hall here at the Oregon State Fairgrounds. Come check it out. Lots of toys, lots of information, lots of vendors. Be happy to talk to you about anything that they have here at the show. And this is a special edition of Newsmakers. We are off at 2 o'clock. Bill O'Reilly will be up at 2:04, followed by Gorka. So don't worry, it's coming up. And we have one final guest here today.
Yeah, and I can't wait to get off the air because there's so many toys to see.
I know
here.
You want to go shopping.
And this thing, it's we can see it from here. It's this gigantic rig. It's why we need two buildings. And it's a drilling rig, I'm pretty sure. And it goes all the way into the rafters of the ceiling.
Yeah.
Land when they elevated that thing. I hope they had a spotter.
Watch out.
Welcome, everyone. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. Boy, one more segment here. We're joined in studio, or actually in the booth here, live and local with Mike Bernard. He is from Gill's Point S and also enjoying the show. I was talking to he was ushered in by Sergeant Mike, and Sergeant Mike was saying some people are hearing us on the radio and coming on down.
Nice.
Like, hey, this is the Ag Show. It is now. Come on down. And it's nice to have people wandering the carpets out here and seeing this and joining us based on what we're telling them.
Yeah, right.
All right. So, Mike Bernard, welcome.
Hello.
It's nice to have you.
Thanks for inviting me.
I don't know anything about Gill's Point S. So, you're obviously catering and selling to an agricultural marketplace.
Yes. All my life, I've been in the farm business.
I was smiling to myself because you've been doing this since 1971.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1971. That's a long time ago. The older we get, Mike, you know, it's like, oh, this person, they've been around forever, you know, since the 90s.
I'm
like,
yeah.
What? The 90s? Or like yesterday.
I was eight, Mike.
Don't beat me up on the age.
No. I was eight.
Eight.
All right. Tell us a little history about Gill's Point S.
Well, it's we're a member of a buying group called Point S, and our owner has 15 stores throughout the north part of the valley here. And my store is in Newburgh.
What do you sell?
Our store is more of ag farmer because we have we're close to St. Paul, which is a big
area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Newburgh, St. Paul?
Yeah. Dairies. big dairies and just try to take care of them.
What do they buy from you?
Egg, anything.
Anything.
We don't, it's not just tractor tires. We're car tires, wheelbarrows. I probably don't sell any airplane tires.
That's what I was trying to get at. You hadn't said the word tires yet. I don't think anybody understands. You're a tire store.
Yes.
Point S. So you do tires for specifically for equipment and agriculture.
Right. Point S, but on the bottom, small letters, it says tire and auto.
Tire and auto. Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.
But specifically for ag.
Well, yeah, but farmers have cars and pickups.
Oh, yeah?
And trucks.
Of course.
So it's not just tractor tires.
That rolling stock is so critical. Some of them have to be really unique, right? For a tractor, some are gigantic. And
well, some of these people, they might have 30 combines.
Wow. It's a big farm.
Right. Yeah, they're huge. But we cater small and large dairies, small dairies. Doesn't make any difference. We're out there to try to help them solve their problem.
Now, when you say you're out there, do you drive out there with those tires? Do you change it on site for them?
Well, I did the actual labor for 40 years. Between my shoulders and back, I'm more or less
in the store?
No, I'm in the pickup.
I go out and
Mike, we're going to refer to you as the trainer. You're telling those young bucks how to do it.
Well, yeah, I know what I'm doing, and I do it the right way.
Yeah.
And I do train people when they listen. I tell them if they want to learn, I listen to me, and I can help them.
Here's the one thing about being in business and having been there since 1971 is you don't get there and you don't survive unless you've earned people's trust.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say.
The name of the game is trust. I learned a long time ago from my mother, you don't lie or you're going to kneel down for half a day in the corner. So it's simple, the business, how you do it. You don't lie to them and you help them. Sales, for me anyway, are secondary. You take care of them and they'll buy from you. I'd rather have people buy from you than try to sell them something.
Yeah, we're talking to Mike Bernard. The company is Bill Gills. Point S. Point S is
Tire and Auto.
For Tire and Auto. And they're servicing the agricultural community. And I just really want to make a point with you here because I like people who are old school business.
Yeah.
I like people like, this is about my relationship with you. And if I didn't make you happy, you're not going to buy from me next year.
Right.
Right. You don't survive for, let me do 30, 40, almost 50 years. Right. Unless you've taken care of them and they're going to come back and buy again. If they don't come back and buy again, you didn't last the first 10 years.
Right. And people, they know if you're there for the sale or you're there to help them.
All right. Can I ask a funny somebody who doesn't know anything about what you do?
Sure.
Those gigantic tire things that's as tall as I am that go on some of these big rigs, how do you change those suckers out?
Well, a lot of people think you lift them up on a tractor.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you don't lift. You let the jack down and put them over the edge of the tire, and then you jack the tractor back up.
Oh, hey, little trip.
And then the weight of the tire will help you put that on with a tire iron.
Yeah, that's got to be a special technique. I don't know how many people in our region know how to do that, right?
that's an old Indian trick I used to use.
We got to take a break. We got to take a break and get to the top of the hour. We appreciate you being here. I wish we could talk a little bit more about what you do. But this has been a special two-hour edition of the Northwest Ag Show for Newsmakers. It's been fun, Dave.
It has been.
Thanks for doing this, and I hope you all can come out. And we learned a lot. Thank you, Mike Bernard of Gills. Point S Ag, Tyron Auto.
Thanks for inviting me.
You betcha. Right. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. Live from the Northwest Ag Show. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.